Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
The preliminary information from police sources, and I emphasize your world, my former world, preliminary, subject to change. It is a man in his middle 20s, probably, possibly from Bangladesh. Been in the country about 7 years, who supposedly was setting the device off in the name of ISIS. So definitely a terrorist attack, definitely intended. As to whether the device malfunctioned or didn't function correctly, that'll have to be determined. As of the moment, he is apparently the only injured person in terms of from the event. Mm. Possibly others from the noise of the explosion, maybe ear issues. Police have him in custody, talking with him. Again, this information is all preliminary. There will be a significant investigation of the area in question, as you might imagine, that right. bomb squad, etc. There will be delays down at the Port Authority throughout most of the day while they conduct that investigation. It was in a passageway between the subway system and the Port Authority, between 7th and 8th Avenue.
Any evidence that there's an uptick in attempts? Or
most clear evidence that we had the bombing the night after I left my term as commissioner, Jimmy O'Neill's first night in office. We had just several weeks ago the attack along the Hudson, the bikeway, and then we have had this one. That's three attacks, definite terrorist attacks. The pace is quickening, as we have been indicating that it would. New York continues to remain the focus of interest because of what is happening right now, the intense publicity that anything that happens in New York brings about. And so this is something that we can anticipate. These attacks are going to increase.
They're preliminary facts. So it just happened a couple hours ago, so you have to understand these are preliminary facts. At approximately 7:20 in a below-ground walkway, which connects the IND line at 42 and 8th Avenue, with the IRT line at 42 and 7, then the shuttle at Times Square and the 1, 2, and 3 train, police were called to a reported explosion. Responding units found an injured 27-year-old male. We've identified him as Ikayed Ullah, A-K-A-Y-E-D-U-L-L-A-H. He had burns and wounds to his body. Preliminary investigation at the scene indicates this male was wearing an improvised low-tech explosive device attached to his body. He intentionally detonated that device. Looks like there are three other people in the immediate area also sustained minor injuries, but Dan Nigro is going to talk about that. The subject was placed in custody and transported to Bellevue Hospital. Immediate police response to the scene included members of the Transit Bureau, Emergency Service Division, Bomb Squad, Counterterrorism, MTA Police, State Troopers, and the FBI's Joint Terrorist Task Force. In addition, the NYPD Strategic Response Group and Critical Response Command were assigned to other key transportation hubs in other locations throughout the city as a precautionary measure. This incident was captured on transit system video. A further review and interview of witnesses is underway. A thorough background investigation into Ikayed Ullah is being conducted by the Joint Terrorist Task Force. We are asking anyone who may have any information about this individual or incident to call the terror hotline, and that's 888-NYC-SAFE.
Let's be clear, as New Yorkers, our lives revolve around the subways. When we hear of an attack in the subway, it's incredibly unsettling. And let's be also clear, this was an attempted terrorist attack. Thank God the perpetrator did not achieve his ultimate goals. Thank God our first responders were there so quickly to address the situation to make sure people were safe. Thank God the only injuries that we know at this point were minor.
All right, those are the sounds from yesterday and the latest terror attack. Here you have in New York City, and this guy strapping a bomb on himself. This could have been far worse during morning chaotic traffic in New York in the subway station out by Times Square. And, you know, no more perfect time to bring on our good friend, Jonathan Gillum. He has a brand new book out. It's out today. It's called Sheep No More. I was honored to write the foreword for this book. And you have wonderful people, my buddy Marcus Luttrell and some other wonderful people. Dave Webb was one of them. Then you've got a lot of military people, Rick Unger, all of our friends literally reading this book and loving it, The Art of Awareness and Attack Survival. It happens to be something that Jonathan and I discuss privately a lot because of my love of martial arts and self-defense. And the attitude is we can't be sheep anymore. Mm. I mean, this is like a terror attack a week. This is, you know, it, and it's happening not just here, but all over the world. And I don't think most people are prepared to deal with any situation. And that's what I've learned in the 5+ years now that I've been doing martial arts. You know, basically awareness and attack survival.
Look at what you've discussed over the past month alone, Sean. You've talked about sexual predators. You've talked about terrorist attacks. You've talked about people at the top of the FBI and our government that are criminals, basically. What this book does, and I know that's a huge stretch of different types of criminality, but the reality is all attackers build target packages on what they want to attack. They find a target. They look for the vulnerabilities. They look for the critical times, critical areas for those times. They look for the best avenue of approach, and then they exploit those things, and they create a target package. We can be doing the same thing, Sean. You have, if you look at your life, when you get up in the mornings, when you commute to work, when you're here at the studio, you go to Fox, you commute home, you have about 5 to 10 different sectors in your life. And you literally, in each one of those sectors, have between 5 and 7 types of attacks that could happen to you. Once you discover those and you look at it from the attacker's point of view, there's no surprise anymore. You're going to know who, why, where, when, and how they could attack you, and then you either avoid it or you mitigate the circumstances. And it doesn't matter if it's a Harvey Weinstein or if it's an ISIS guy trying to blow up Times Square. Once you realize who they are and where they're coming from, you can mitigate those things.
I agree. You know, one of the things that has been really amazing is the military and many observers, as soon as Donald Trump changed the rules of engagement and allowed the military to do their job, and we're not guiding wars through Washington.
Right.
You know, we have been able to deeply degrade ISIS at a level that even military guys on the ground said that they were shocked about. All right, let me play. A lot of this was also connected to chain migration.
Right.
And this gets to the issue of vetting refugees and
sure.
building the wall. Let me play what the president said about ending chain migration.
Before we begin, I want to address the terrorist attack that took place yesterday in New York City and to praise the first responders, local police, and federal law enforcement for their quick action. They did an incredible job. There have now been 2 terrorist attacks in New York City in recent weeks carried out by foreign nationals here on green cards. The first attacker came through the visa lottery and the second through chain migration. We're going to end both of them. The lottery system and chain migration. We're going to end them fast. Congress must get involved immediately, and they are involved immediately. And I can tell you we have tremendous support. They will be ended.
This is the simple common sense that needs to be applied to every person in this country in terms of if they want to survive, which is, I'll get into that in a second,
mm-hmm.
that you talk a lot about in the book.
Sure. Listen, it doesn't matter if it's chain migration, if it's the way the State Department sets up vetting overseas, or the way that our military is now allowed to fight. What happens, or look at stop and frisk and the surveillance of the mosques that were stopped here. When we have bad policy that's set up strictly because of politics, either eliminating something or creating a void, where that void is at is where bad people exist, and that's how nefarious people operate. They look for those voids. The fact that the president identified chain migration, he's identified the borders in this country, he's identified so many different vulnerabilities, and also the rules of engagement. He's identified those vulnerabilities, those voids where these bad people operate, and he's eliminating those, shows you that he is understanding and his awareness is heightened, and he understands where these types of political mistakes have been made so he can fix these things and close the gap on these bad people.
You know, you have to look at this on the micro level and on a macro level. We as a country, we've got to fight radical Islamists. We've got to fight mullahs in Iran. We've got to fight evil wherever it exists. But, you know, you start out by actually defining key terms, predator and prey.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that drew me to you as a friend was when I do self-defense, which is Krav Maga, Kempo, Jiu-Jitsu, boxing, blade and firearm training. That also includes defensive blade and firearm training. If you have a gun pointed at your head, right, what you do. If you have a gun at your back, if you have a gun at your chest,
yeah.
If somebody pulls out a blade, which can be more deadly than a firearm in some instances, if somebody's, you know, trained in the use of that blade.
Sure.
You're telling people that they have got to understand what this is about for them and what they need to know and how they're going to deal with evil if it confronts them in life.
Exactly. Sean, if you go look at the animals on the plains of Africa, you have the lions, which are the predators, and you have, like, let's say the gazelle, who are a prey. But the gazelles don't show up at the water hole completely clueless, looking at a cell phone with no idea where the bad guy's going to come from. They actually know exactly how the bad guy works, but they have to put themselves in that environment to get water. So they know how to act, not just react. They know where the bad guy's going to come from, and that's why they're constantly looking, observing, and then if something happens, they react with action, right? So action beats reaction. I know you hear that all the time. That is where people need to get in their mind.
The average person walking through the streets of New York City, they've got their headphones on or in their ears, or they're text walking, or they're right, talking on the phone. They have zero situational awareness.
And I've talked about this 100 times when I think really if we look at the shooting, the mass shooting in Vegas, as soon as it happened, what did people do? They assumed that it was fireworks instead of assuming it was an attack. And then, and this is no, I'm not hitting on anybody for this because this is where we have to get away from this mindset. But the promoters, the sound people, the lighting people, what'd they do? They sat there and tried to figure it out and they turned the lights on and everybody laid down. They pretty much just presented a huge target. No different than if you go in a range and you have a static target.
Now you can see everybody.
So if they had understood the reality that we're in, maybe you wouldn't have as many drinks when you go there. But if you hear some popping over, instead of saying that's probably fireworks, you say, I think that's gunshots. Let's keep the lights off and already have a plan. Not make it up there. Have a plan.
But it's where you sit in restaurants, for example. You know, I mean, there's certain little things that you can do to increase your safety odds that if something happens, or
sure,
even a movie theater, for crying out loud.
There, every place, I can guarantee you, the majority of places you go, take when the Ariana Grande concert was blown up, right? Had you done any, these parents had done any type of online surveillance of that area, they would have known that is the drop-off and pickup area. They should have told their kids, wait 10, 15 minutes, be the last ones out of the stadium. We'll get you down the road here. Don't come out this area. That's a critical area, and that's a critical time. Fortunately, they don't think like that, and those kids and those adults are dead now.
All right, quick break. We'll come back more with Jonathan Gillum and his brand-new book, Sheep No More. Jonathan Gillum continues with us. His brand-new book out today, Sheep No More. You can get it on Hannity.com. You know, I don't think people are fully aware of the dangers that police, law enforcement have to deal with every day,
mm-hmm,
and maybe they shouldn't have to be aware of it, but I do think that there's the thing that bothers me, and this is for a lot of my friends. I ask them all the time, what are you going to do? What happens if? And I run through scenarios with them.
Right.
And I'd say the vast majority have no clue what they're going to do if something happens.
And that what if game that you talk about in the forward and we talk about in the book, that what if game is really, that's what we're doing here. It's one of the most important things that you can do. You can start teaching kids this at 9 years old. You can teach old people this. The reality is, like truckers, a lot of truckers listen to this radio show.
Yeah.
They park their trucks in places where they wouldn't normally park their truck.
Right.
They should be able, before they park there, they should get on Google Earth, do a map study of where they're at. I would call the local precinct and say, I'm parked here. They may not want to hear it, but now you've identified who you are and that you're here.
Right.
These are things that you have to think of before you get there by playing the what if game.
All right, let's talk about the rest of the book here. As you put it all together, you talk about escaping, evading, fighting fear, the defender, building an attacker's target package. The reality is we're all sitting ducks in
some way or shape.
Ways.
Right. You know, these women that were going up to Harvey Weinstein's hotel room, they could have pre-thought that out. It was no surprise he was going to try to pull that on people. Why not bring somebody with you? Why not bring another person with you, a guy with you, your manager? You see, these are things that you can do to mitigate these circumstances. If you're in, if I was a female working for NBC and I knew Matt Lauer was a predator, I would have made sure before I went into that room that I had somebody with me or I had somebody calling me within 3 or 4 minutes to tell, you know, just so I could say, oh, I got a meeting, I got to go. There's ways that you can think like this predator and then actually mitigate the circumstances. We have to get to a point. And the other thing you just said there is, instead of saying, if you get yourself into something like happened in Times Square, it's not run, hide, or fight. It's escape, evade, or fight. Escape means that you're doing your best to get out of there, but using cover and concealment. Evade means you may hide, but you're going to continue to move.
This is a self-defense book and something you're going to learn about how to keep yourself and your family safe and learn a lot about how dangerous this world can be. It's called Sheep No More. Jonathan Gillum will put it on our website, Hannity.com. The Art of Awareness and Attack Survival. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. Good. Congratulations on the book. We love it. And we're glad it finally came out. Sean Spicer at the bottom of this half hour as we continue.
Let's put it this way. There is absolutely no collusion. That has been proven. When you look at the committees, whether it's the Senate or the House, everybody walked my worst enemies. They walk out, they say, there is no collusion, but we'll continue to look. They're spending millions and millions of dollars. There is absolutely no collusion. I didn't make a phone call to Russia. I have nothing to do with Russia. Everybody knows it. That was a Democrat hoax. It was an excuse for losing the election.
We've learned about Donald Trump Jr. eagerly accepting a meeting to get dirt on Hillary Clinton from somebody he was told was a Russian lawyer. We've learned with the Comey plea agreement with George Papadopoulos, former foreign advisor for the Trump campaign, we've learned that he was told by a professor with ties to the Kremlin in April 2016, long before I knew anything about the hacking or the public knew anything about the hacking, that the Russians were claiming that they had damaging information. Now, you said in January 2017, this year, that you knew of no collusion. Did you know of those two events?
No, I did not. And the statement I made at the time was true. I had no direct evidence of collusion. Now, we had lots of concerns because we were aware of multiple meetings that were going on, while at least my part was not aware directly of the content of these meetings. But we were certainly concerned. And the metaphor I've used before is I think our dashboard warning lights were clearly on about what was going on. But to say specifically that we had evidence of smoking gun evidence of collusion, no. But, of course, a lot more has come out raises, I think, circumstantial questions, if nothing else.
But Mr. Clapper then went on to say that, to his knowledge, there was no evidence of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. We did not conclude any evidence in our report. And when I say our report, that is the NSA, FBI, and CIA, with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything, any reflection of collusion between the members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that in our report. Was Mr. Clapper wrong when he said that?
I think he's right about characterizing the report, which you all have read.
We did not include any evidence in our report, and I say our, that's NSA, FBI, and CIA with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything, that had any reflection of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that included in our report.
Have you seen anything, either through intelligence briefings, anything to back up any of the accusations that
you've
made?
They have the documentation that they did the hacking.
The hacking.
On the DNC.
Right.
And on some of us, you know, that have.
But the collusion, though.
No, we have not.
Do you have evidence that there was, in fact, collusion between Trump associates and Russia during the campaign?
Not at this time.
Have you seen anything that suggests any collusion between the Russians and the Trump campaign?
Well, there's an awful lot of smoke there, let's put it that way. People that might have said they were involved, to what extent they were involved, to what extent the president might have known about these people or whatever. There's nothing there from that standpoint that we have seen directly linking our president to any of that.
Did evidence exist of collusion, coordination, conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russian state actors at the time you learned of 2016 efforts?
I don't know whether or not such collusion, that's your term, such collusion existed. I don't know.
The big questions, of course, is there any evidence of collusion you have seen yet? Is there?
There is a lot of smoke. We have no smoking gun at this point, but there is a lot of smoke.
Dianne Feinstein has said there's no evidence of collusion. So collusion between whom? Can you tell us that?
I'm not prepared to say that there's proof you could take to a jury, but I can't say that there is enough that we ought to be investigating.
At the time you separated from service in January of 2017, had you seen any evidence that Donald Trump or any member of his campaign colluded, conspired, or coordinated with the Russians or anyone else to infiltrate or impact our voter infrastructure?
Not beyond what has been out there open source, and not beyond anything that I'm sure this committee has already seen and heard before directly from the intelligence community.
Our source is not the Russian government.
So in other words, let me be clear. Russia did not give you the Podesta documents or anything from the DNC.
That's correct.
All right, so there you have it. Again and again, a year's investigation. No evidence. The one guy that knows, Julian Assange. Oh, it's not Russia. It's not a state. And then, of course, you know, we've got pretty much everybody saying the same thing, even including James Clapper. No evidence of Trump-Russia collusion, but they don't stop. They don't stop ever. They're never going to stop. Their goal, what they want to do, is absolutely to destroy this president at any cost, any way imaginable. You know, I talk about the forces against the president. We got the deep state. We got a corrupt media. We got Democrats. They don't want to do anything for this president. Weak Republicans and never Trumpers. In other words, the same people that hate anybody that likes Trump. Hence what we've been dealing with all weekend. Silence everybody. The number one censorship group in the country. The number one group, the most anti-free speech movement in the country. They want a world without Fox, without talk radio, without Rush, without Levin, without Laura, without Sean Hannity. That's the world they want to live in. Bought and paid for by millionaires and billionaires. Anyway, here to discuss all of this, Kirk Wiebe, former senior analyst, NSA, Bill Benny. Benny is with us, rare in studio appearance, former technical director of the NSA World Geopolitical and Military Analysis and Reporting Group. Welcome, both of you. Bill, it's nice to see you in person.
Yeah,
how are
thanks.
You?
Good to see you, too.
How many years NSA?
32 as a civilian and 4 in the military.
All right, so that's 36 years of intelligence. We started out the presidency of Donald Trump with like a leak a day.
Yeah.
And one time on this program, you told me that every email, every text message, every phone call that we make, every American is being metadata stored.
Yes.
Everyone.
Right. Yeah.
Isn't that illegal? Isn't that a violation?
Of course it is. Yeah. But you can't get them into court, which I'm trying to do. I've got I'm supporting 3 separate lawsuits alleging the violation of the Constitution, 1st, 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendments.
Yeah. So, in other words, we have to go against our own government as weaponized intelligence.
Yeah, that's right.
So all the time we talked about the weaponization of the IRS under Obama against Tea Party affiliated groups, that turned out we got an apology recently.
Yeah.
A little late.
Yeah, but that also came out of that data, too. Because they showed the entire relationship of the Tea Party with anybody else that was trying to join that to get 501c3. So the IRS knew that right away, and they had direct access to that.
With all that we hear, it's like every time Donald Trump has gotten momentum, there's always something that throws the momentum off. Are you saying that they have everything they already want on Trump? They've already surveilled him to such an extent. Like, for example, I believe that it may turn out to be the Fusion GPS Russian propaganda lying dossier. Was that used as a predicate for a FISA warrant?
That very well could be. I don't know for sure, but certainly that is a possibility.
Yeah. But even beyond that, you're saying there was more surveillance.
Oh, yeah. They take in everything that we're saying and doing.
Everything.
Everything.
Can you prove that?
Well, yeah, I've proved it. I've already got the proof in the documents that I've submitted as sworn affidavits to the appeals courts.
Well, so basically we have no freedom, and this is the predicate of a police state, what you're describing.
Yeah, I think Goethe captured it pretty well. He basically said that no one is more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they're free. That's us.
Kirk, do you agree with everything that Bill's saying?
Absolutely. And I wanted to point out that they're not just storing metadata, Sean. It's content as well.
Meaning
and
what?
A good bit of evidence for that is when the Congress says, oh, we're going to forego, quote, about, unquote, stuff when we under FISA. We're not going to look at that anymore. Well, you can't look at about if you don't have content.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a direct admission.
So what are we then to believe in terms of now that we know it's a bought and paid for propaganda dossier that they denied for a year? Just stay on the dossier for a second. What are we to believe? Did they Hillary Clinton knowingly paid for Russian lies to help influence the American people and win an election? And now are we able to prove that finally?
Well, I think we will be able to. I think we're coming close. I don't know that we have the access necessary to do that definitively, but all the arrows certainly point in that direction.
So, Bill, I've talked to people that are in your crazy spy world community, and they're very interesting people to me. I like spy novels. I like Jason Bourne. I think all that stuff is very cool. But the sophistication of intelligence gathering today, isn't that way beyond the comprehension? For example, any phone call can be tapped into, way beyond the comprehension of most people. But here's my question. Are you aware, is there such a thing as a deep state? Define it if it is. And what are they actively trying to accomplish here?
Well, I mean, I would put the intelligence community, all the agencies as a part of that deep state, along with the part of the Congress, the intelligence committees. And I would also include the FISA court.
And when you say deep state, define that.
Well, it's the government behind the government that's basically pulling the strings, telling the supposed government where to go and what to do. That's why I called the IC the Praetorian Guard for the country. They basically determine who the emperor is and what he does.
And Donald Trump broke that cycle.
Yes, he did.
And that's why there's widespread anger.
That's right.
But I've got to imagine, like you, there are plenty of good people in the intelligence community because they put their lives on the line to spy on our enemies using the powerful mechanism of intelligence gathering for our benefit, right?
That's right, yeah. But they're not the ones in charge of the agencies, and those are the people who are really a part of the deep state.
Do you have names of people? Like, for example, we talk about Obama holdovers. We see the unmasking. Why would Susan Rice and the U.N. ambassador Power,
yeah, right.
Samantha Power, why would they be unmasking Americans?
Well, I mean, if somebody's collaborating with WikiLeaks, they would certainly want to know who that is. And so if they unmask them, then they would know. And
so when I interview or talk to Julian Assange, they unmask me?
Yeah, just to know who you are and what you're doing. And also all your conversation with them, if you're on the phone, or if you email them, all of that data is captured and reported.
But if I'm talking to, you know, my brother-in-law, are they taking that conversation too?
Yes. Yeah. And the evidence I was accumulating showed that they were using translation devices to automatically do it, to try to get an 80% correct translation of the conversation on the phone.
Almost in real time, I hear they can do that.
Very close, yeah.
Unbelievable. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. And Congressman Jim Jordan, Matt Gaetz are going to join us. They are saying the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, needs to appoint a special counsel or it's time for him to go. We'll explain straight ahead.
Have you seen any evidence that this dirt, these emails, were ever given to the Trump campaign?
Not so far.
Not so far. Have you seen any communications that suggested that the Trump campaign wanted them to release them through a different means? Because obviously they were ultimately released by WikiLeaks.
No, I have not.
All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, Kirk Wiebe, former senior analyst for the NSA, Bill Binney, who's a former technical director for the NSA World Geopolitical Military Analysis and Reporting Group. Kirk, how many years were you in the NSA and involved in intelligence gathering?
32, including military service.
All right, so you guys have combined, you know, no offense, you're both like 100 years experience here. You know, I listen to you, and the average American listens to you. You know, somebody once said to me, everything that the Obama holdovers, the deep state, ever wanted against Donald Trump, they already have. Is that true?
Yeah, they sure do. I mean, these people have access to everything, as Bill has been saying. They're in, by virtue of that, and because knowledge is extreme power, they have people right where they want them. They can blackmail them. They can threaten them. They can use anything against them. And the average employee doesn't even know that. I mean, what's really going on is known by the higher-ups, the higher-up managers. They're pulling the strings.
Mm-hmm. Well, who are the managers current? Are the managers from the Obama administration? Is this, like, passed on from generation to generation?
I don't think it's passed on. I think they're part of the holdover from the Obama. That's not to say, though, that there weren't holdovers from Bush, where the whole thing started. The whole mass surveillance began under Cheney and Bush. And
let me ask Bill this question. Then how does Donald Trump defend against something as illegal as what you're describing?
I think he really has to get the Department of Justice moving against these people and start putting some in jail for the crimes they're committing. If he does that, then others will see that and start to stop.
And he can do that.
Yes, he can.
Well, it has to be his Justice Department,
That's
and they
right.
got to move, which we're
yep.
going to talk about in the next hour.
Yep.
Great to see you in studio. Yep. I appreciate all your work. A little scary. You guys, if you wrote a novel like this, I'm not sure I'd even believe it.
Yeah.
Kirk, thank you too, my friend. Hope to see you yep. one day in the studio. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. Freedom Caucus Congressman Jim Jordan, Matt Gaetz of Florida, they're coming on next. They said the wait's over. They're calling on the Attorney General Jeff Sessions, make things happen and get to the bottom of Fusion One, the Russian dossier, or frankly, maybe he needs to go. We'll get to that more next Sean Hannity Show.
This fake dossier was made up, and I understand they paid a tremendous amount of money, and Hillary Clinton always denied it. The Democrats always denied it.
Well, I think the uranium sale to Russia and the way it was done, so underhanded, with tremendous amounts of money being passed, I actually think that's Watergate modern age. This was the Democrats coming up with an excuse for losing an election. It's an election that's very hard for a Democrat to lose because the Electoral College is set in such a way that it's very hard to lose that election for a Democrat. They lost it. They lost it very badly and very easily. I mean, you look at the votes. It was 306 to what? 223 or something. They lost it by a lot. They didn't know what to say, so they made up the whole Russia hoax. Now it's turning out that the hoax has turned around, and you look at what's happened with Russia, and you look at the uranium deal, and you look at the fake dossier, so that's all turned around.
We know there was a huge amount of content being produced in places like Macedonia. We know that WikiLeaks, which is basically a front now for Putin, was more than willing to publish stolen emails from the DNC, from John Podesta, and that then those emails were weaponized with ridiculous, absurd, untrue stories being churned out, on and on. So there's a lot we know already.
You followed this extremely closely.
Well, I started following this back in the summer of 2016 because there was something going on. When the DNC hack happened, you know, we had a huge political crisis when Republicans physically broke in to the Democratic Party's records back in the so-called Watergate years. This is a different kind of theft. And it's...
Do you think this is bigger than Watergate?
I think it's probably bigger than Watergate because it is about the future.
So you write in your book that the impact of voter suppression didn't get enough attention in 2016. Mm-hmm. And there was one study that found that there were 1 million lost votes in the 2016 election. So do you think voter suppression cost you the election?
I think it contributed to the outcome. I think in a couple of places, most notably Wisconsin, I think it had a dramatic impact on the outcome.
You said Bob Mueller's a zealot.
He is.
And you were emphatic about it.
He is. I had experiences with him.
What kind of experience?
Well, I had a case, and my colleague, Harvey Civilglade, and I went to see him in Washington, and we started to talk about prosecutorial and misconduct by the FBI, and he cut us off. And he said, it's a non-starter to talk to me about FBI misconduct or prosecutorial misconduct. It's a non-starter. He doesn't want to hear about that. He is in the business of protecting the FBI, protecting prosecutors at all costs. I don't suggest he's unethical, but he's very zealous, and he uses a tactic that's very questionable.
I would argue, then, that's probably what makes him good at his job.
Is that wrong?
It makes him effective at his job. But the job of a prosecutor is to do justice, not to get as many notches on his belt as possible. And I think this tactic...
You believe that's what he's...
Well, I think he's... Look, he is the special counsel. He has an enormous budget. He has a man with his target on his back, the president of the United States. He's not going to be satisfied until he gets to the president or people very close to him. That's the danger of a special prosecutor.
Wow, Alan Dershowitz in that last comment, pretty powerful. You know, Hillary will blame anybody and everybody. There's no evidence at all that any Republican had anything to do whatsoever with the DNC leaks of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. I wish somebody, Mueller or somebody, and besides Dana Rohrabacher and myself, would ask the one guy on the face of this earth what evidence he has that would show it's not Russia and we could put this whole mess to an end. And the American people deserve the truth after all this. Whatever the truth is, and he's told me multiple times, it's not Russia. Like him, dislike him, doesn't matter. He's the one that knows. Anyway, was this all a massive plot to destroy Donald Trump? Was it actually organized and orchestrated? In other words, I've always talked about five forces against the president, the deep state. Then, of course, you got liberal Democrats. They don't want the president to succeed. This president has dealt with nearly a leak a day of intelligence and unmasking and then leaking intelligence and you know, all this stuff happening. Then you got a media that hates him. Then you got Republicans that hate him. Then you got never Trumpers that are at war with him. Was this a plan that was hatched and who did it? Well, that's the thesis of a brand new book by Ed Klein. It's called The Plot to Destroy Donald Trump. Ed Klein, you may remember, former foreign editor of Newsweek, former editor-in-chief of the New York Times Magazine, contributing editor of Vanity Fair. And every time you write a book, all those people that you used to know, love, and like, and that praised your work, they hate you. Is there a plot to destroy? Was this plot hatched in December, as you're saying? And what evidence do you have?
Well, according to a senior Clinton campaign strategist who worked for Hillary in both 2008 and 2016, Hillary Clinton personally authorized her campaign chairman, John Podesta, to launch this controversial Donald Trump Russian dossier. Not only that, Hillary approved Podesta's decision to pay for the dossier by funneling campaign funds, I believe unlawfully.
Now, it's interesting because this has just all come out after a year of lying. And this book had to go to press how long ago?
Oh, I'd say about 2 months ago.
Yeah. I mean, for those that don't know the publishing business, you knew about this 2 months ago.
Yes.
And now we've been able to prove that.
Absolutely pinned it down, Sean. There's no question in my mind.
She paid for the dossier.
The dossier was delivered to the Clinton campaign by Fusion GPS, that's the opposition research firm, in the summer of 2016. And Hillary read it. And I'm told by this campaign strategist who was there, she was thrilled by its salacious content. She even bragged about it, so much so that the people in her Brooklyn campaign headquarters knew about it. They all knew about it. Not all. The top echelon knew about it. And she said, and I'm quoting now, according to this campaign strategist, "This is my secret weapon, and it's going to blow Trump out of the water." That's what she said.
And it all ended up being Hillary, DNC, Obama bought and paid for lies, propaganda, misinformation, disinformation.
That's right.
From Russia.
From Kremlin secret intelligence service types who are working to get this disinformation into our system.
And this is the dossier that claimed that Donald Trump was in the Ritz-Carlton with two hookers who were urinating in his bed.
All BS, as you know.
All of it.
Right.
And yet it was repeated all over television.
Well, even worse than that, Jennifer Palmieri, who is the communications director of Hillary's campaign.
Total hack. Yeah.
Oh, boy. And Brian Fallon, her press secretary, leaked this stuff to friendly reporters and congressmen. And this stuff got into large circulation among the media, which did not repeat the words because they couldn't prove it. But the very thesis that there was a collusion took effect, and that's where it started
now,
to spread.
If you listen to the left, they're going to tell you, and their arguments all over TV, which is predicated on a lie, is that, well, Republicans, and now we know it was the Washington Free Beacon and what's his name, Paul Singer, that they funded this. That's true.
But they didn't fund
Steele's research.
That's right.
Which is a very big distinction. None of this was Russian related. They were just doing simple op research.
Research, right.
In your book, you say that this is a plot. Everyone's going to say you're a conspiracy theorist, that it was a real plot to destroy Trump. I assume you're talking about the deep state and other ways that was initiated in the Obama White House. Does this have to do with the unmasking?
Yes.
Does this have to do with intelligence leaking?
On December 16, Susan Rice, the national security advisor, was invited to the family quarters of the White House for a dinner. My source was at this dinner. She presented a scheme or a plot or whatever you want to call it to unmask the names of Trump aides and advisors that were gathered when the NSA was doing electronic intercepts, and to unmask these names. And then she asked the president for permission to spread these names throughout the intelligence community with the knowledge that if she did so, they would leak to the press. This is where it all began in this meeting, and the president sat there and approved it.
So Obama. So in other words, when you hear the UN ambassador Samantha Power in the course of an election year, now this I guess predates this meeting with Susan Rice in the residence at the White House, because she was unmasking
230 some odd,
almost an unmasking a day. And why would the UN ambassador ever need to do that?
You
got Susan Rice and Ben Rhodes and everybody else involved in this.
Yeah, Ben Rhodes is a big player in this unmasking thing, because he was Susan Rice's deputy, but he really, in a sense, ran the National Security Council under Susan Rice. And he was the guy, of course, who did the Iran deal for Obama. He's a real bad actor in this situation.
You claim, and I think I'm one of the few in the country that believes and knows and understands what the deep state means.
Yes.
And there is a deep state.
And the FBI has infiltrated the deep state. Oh. And I actually print an FBI report in this book about that.
Okay. This is what I want to know. You have two exclusive FBI reports in the book that prove the existence, A, of the deep state that are working against Trump. I'll get to the ISIS side of it in a second. How do you have that information? What do those reports specifically say and claim?
Well, those reports say that agents of the FBI, and this is a written report, you know, that I actually saw that was delivered to the director of the FBI from the field offices. About 2,000 interviews took place, and they infiltrated meetings in Washington and other places where these rogue elements in the bureaucracy were being taught and told how to slow walk the agenda of the Trump administration, how to make files disappear, how to erase computer files. And a lot of this information was being instructed to them by union organizers, and this took place in a church in Washington, D.C. This is one meeting. So this is the FBI has no doubt. They didn't use the word deep state, but they did describe what is the deep state.
All right. We'll come back. We'll pick it up. Ed Klein is with us. The plot to destroy Trump. How many number one bestsellers have you had?
This will be the third.
This will be very confidently. How many bestsellers have you had?
Well, this one is going to be
number one. I kind of suspect you're right. All right, we'll take a break. More with Ed Klein. We have a lot of ground to cover here. We may hold them past the bottom of the hour. As we continue, Sean Hannity Show. Joining us is Ed Klein, number one New York Times bestselling author. His brand new book out, The Plot to Destroy Trump. And we were talking about the deep state and how they're working against Trump. Now, we know that this deep state exists, and what we're really talking about is weaponizing the powerful tools of intelligence gathering, where they could listen into any conversation of any American anytime.
That's right.
You know, Bill Binney, who's been on this program, says every call, every email, every text message is all metadata.
Right.
Gathered and secured in some of these data centers that the government has.
And we know that the intelligence community set out from the very beginning with John Brennan, who was then the head of the CIA, to undermine Donald Trump. And Brennan was a terrible, terrible opponent of Trump. He hated the idea that Donald Trump was trying to make a deal with the Russians on certain areas where they could cooperate, such as, for instance, Syria. He did, and this went against Brennan's religion, if you want to call it that, and the religion of the intelligence community. And this intelligence community has been rogue ever since Trump won the election.
Well, to me, that is key, because if the weaponry of intelligence is turned against the American people, and it has been, if you're unmasking Americans for no good reason at all, just for political purposes, for example, was the FISA warrant based on the phony, salacious Hillary Clinton bought and paid for dossier?
We don't know, but we assume that probably was.
Oh, I think it was.
Yeah, I do too.
Now, that would mean any evidence that they gotten out of that would be inadmissible in court, wouldn't it?
Right. Why otherwise would James Comey have briefed Trump and Obama on this dossier if he didn't think it was valuable and usable for intelligence purposes?
It wouldn't make sense.
No, of course
not. Yeah, in a lot of different ways. All right. What about the FBI reports warning that ISIS ties to the anti-Trump resistance and highlighting the danger of domestic terrorism from anti-Trump radicals? You're saying basically this is a propaganda campaign that was hatched.
You're talking about the ISIS connection,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the FBI, what they say. Quote, "There is clearly overwhelming evidence that there are growing ties between U.S. radicals and the Islamic State, as well as several ISIS offshoots and splinter groups. This is the greatest challenge to law enforcement," and this is still a quote, "since the Weather Underground and the Black Panther Party."
And who's connected to this?
So here's what happened. The FBI, in the summer of 2016, sent a group of agents to Germany for the G20 Summit of chief, industrialized countries.
Right.
And there were a lot of protests on the street, and they discovered that Antifa, these American violent groups, were taking part in these protests. So they followed them. And what they discovered is that they had contacts with Al-Qaeda operatives and ISIS operatives. And when they went deeper into it with Interpol and others, they discovered that our locally grown left-wing anarchists, who are smashing everybody, property and beating up people.
Occupy Wall Street,
yeah,
Antifa.
Those whole groups were getting instructions on how to make bombs and how to use. How do I know?
The
from
FBI?
The FBI report, yeah.
And you're printing the report inside the book?
The entire report is printed.
All right, we'll take a break. Ed Klein is with us, The Plot to Destroy Trump, and he's talking at length about the intel of the left's, what he's saying is a conspiracy to take down the president of the United States. But when you look at all that's happened in a year, have we ever had this level of unmasking, ever have this abuse of intelligence weaponry? Now we have the admission that, yeah, the IRS was used as a weapon against the American people. All scary stuff. We'll take a break.
At one point, the attorney general had directed me not to call it an investigation, but instead to call it a matter, which confused me and concerned me. But that was one of the bricks in the load that led me to conclude I have to step away from the department if we're to close this case credibly.
Joining us now, Tom Fitton is with us, and Tom is the president of Judicial Watch. And we've got to send out major kudos to these guys, because they have uncovered more information regarding both the Loretta Lynch tarmac meeting and the relationship between Mueller's special lieutenant, this ever corrupt Andrew Weissman, and his relationship and praise of Sally Yates, who, of course, defied the president's orders as an Obama holdover. And I'm so in awe, so proud of you. Weissman is now caught sending to Yates, which it shows, just like in the case of this guy, Peter Strzok, that they have political agendas, and it's anti-Trump and it's pro-Hillary. Well, how can these people possibly be involved in these investigations? It is so corrupt. Tom Fitton joins us right now. How are you, sir?
Sean, good to be with you again. Thank you.
All right. I want you to explain in detail the Freedom of Information Act request. If I'm not mistaken, I think you filed this back in May of this year. You finally got a hold of it. A couple of smoking guns come out of this. Among them, Andrew Weissman, who I have explained in great detail on this program, was the guy in the Anderson Accounting, Enron, Merrill Lynch cases, and how he is praising the woman that defied the president and an Obama holdover.
It's interesting. Acting Attorney General Sally Yates, the Obama holdover that President Trump kept for 2.5 weeks until she broke all the rules and refused to enforce his temporary immigration ban from terrorist countries, we thought it'd be interesting to get her emails from the time she was acting attorney general, I think 2.5 weeks worth of emails. Of course, we didn't get them. We had to sue back in May, and we just got them. And they show emails from various Justice Department officials praising her. And what stood out among those emails was this email from Andrew Weissman, which you quoted earlier, talking about how he was in awe of her. Well, you know, this guy, by the way, was head of the criminal fraud section of the Justice Department, probably still is technically while he's over there working for Mr. Mueller, and he is Mr. Mueller's top deputy.
But this is a guy behind it. Listen, remember, he was accused of making up laws that don't exist. He was accused of holding exculpatory evidence in the case of those poor Merrill guys that ended up going to jail for almost a year. And it turns out they did nothing. And the Supreme Court scorched him 9-0, as did the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals.
But he's also we now have an email showing that he was praising a government official for breaking the rules and standing against President Trump's enforcement of the rule of law. So this guy doesn't want to follow the rules. He admits it in the email.
This guy is abusively biased.
President Trump.
You cannot have political partisans, and this is my point from the beginning, and I had no idea how right I was, and that is, why is Mueller appointing people that only donate to Obama, Clinton, and the DNC? You know, why did he pick somebody like Weissman with his atrocious record? And then we find out he picks Peter Strzok and Peter Strzok's girlfriend, and they have a pro-Hillary, anti-Trump bias. And then you've got this guy praising Sally Yates, and one has to ask how politicized the criminal justice system is if these are the people that Mueller has appointed, and if they were not driven politically and ideologically from the get-go.
Well, that's right. I mean, the deep state is running our government, and when Mueller comes in, any special counsel comes in, he takes these officials from the FBI, the top echelons of the FBI and the Justice Department, and they don't believe in what the president's trying to accomplish, and they have a right to believe that as U.S. citizens, but they're not allowed to bring those views to their job. They're supposed to enforce the rule of law in a neutral way, and they've demonstrated through these emails that they're not willing to do that, praising lawlessness, attacking President Trump while he's running for office, while praising Hillary Clinton in the case of Peter Strzok, while he's supposed to be investigating her. This is strike two for Mr. Mueller, and I've long believed that he's out of control, his office is compromised, and it needs to be shut down.
How do we
can't trust what this agent, what this special counsel is going to do. Even if you're a leftist, you should want to shut it down because it's so compromised. You're not going to get a fair hearing or a fair result, even if you don't believe Mueller or the Russia collusion scandal is a unicorn, as we believe.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm going to tell you from my perspective. Well, let me first go on to the other news that you were able to pick up here. And I did like your line that you felt that the FBI probe of Hillary's emails and Mueller's investigation of Trump is irredeemably compromised. One of the things that we've now learned this week is that Comey and Strzok and others, that they had exonerated Hillary in every way imaginable before they even did the full investigation. And your group, Judicial Watch, sued the feds to release the documents pertaining to the former Attorney General Loretta Lynch's tarmac meeting with Bill Clinton just days before she made her decision as it relates to Hillary Clinton and exonerated her, which was highly and totally inappropriate, and how she lectured and Comey obeyed, I guess, you know, the order not to call it an investigation, but to call it a matter. And of course, then the drafting of this took away the legal language of gross negligence to extreme carelessness. But anyway, it took, what, 6 weeks after the Justice Department, after the ruling for the Justice Department, to turn over 29 pages. Well, I don't think they turned out to be particularly good for you.
No, it's really outrageous. First of all, those pages, we caught them red-handed fighting because the FBI told us initially they looked for records and couldn't find any. But we caught them because the Justice Department told us they had records with the FBI. So the FBI said, oh, whoops, look what we found. Mm-hmm. And the documents show what they were trying to hide. The emails show that they were more concerned about a whistleblower in the local Phoenix Police Department who told a reporter about the meeting and details about how it was coordinated. The Clinton-Lynch meeting needed to be coordinated. It was not just coincidental because of the security details involved. And they were more concerned about that leak than the meeting itself. No emails about the meeting itself. And they're talking about getting the leaker and stemming further damage from further disclosures. this is what your FBI was doing last year as it was faced with this crisis that even the Attorney General, General Lynch, said at the time, cast a shadow over the investigation. They're concerned with going after the leaker.
Well, we learned a lot this week. First, we learned about this guy, Peter Strzok. Then we learned about Peter Strzok's girlfriend, who was also working for Mueller. Then it was your revelation about Andrew Weissman. Now we're hearing today about, you know, Jeannie Ray, who was a part of, I guess, the law firm where Mueller worked, which, by the way, 99% of their donation dollars went to Democrats. But anyway, Ray was also the personal attorney for Obama's deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes, and her name was atop this bombshell report of George Papadopoulos striking a plea agreement with Mueller's special counsel, and she left the law firm and, you know, to work on this Russia case, as a lot of other people did. They must have all been led to believe that their careers were going to, giving up millions of dollars, that their careers were going to soar because they were going to, you know, double down and basically undo the election of 2016 by taking down the president. And it didn't matter that it was a team of partisan hacks doing it.
Who was running the Justice Department? Rod Rosenstein nominally is supposed to be running the Mueller investigation. He's answerable to Mueller. We can complain all we want about Mueller, and we're right to complain. But in the end, Rosenstein is responsible for shutting him down.
Rosenstein said, I'm satisfied today with Mueller's work on the Russia probe.
Well, the president should intervene and tell Mr. Rosenstein, as his boss, the American people aren't satisfied, and you need to assure that that operation is being run ethically. And if you can't, you need to shut it down and replace the personnel. We cannot leave the Justice Department to the bureaucrats. And Rod Rosenstein may be a nice man, but he's one of the establishment, and he is not going to do the right thing unless pushed.
Well, I mean, it raises a question that I was discussing earlier today with my good friend and colleague, Greg Jarrett. And that is, you know, he says Mueller needs to go. Everybody needs to go. We need to start all over with another special counsel. And my argument is, well, for crying out loud, the most partisan people for a year, they couldn't find any evidence of Trump-Russia collusion. Now we're going to spend another boatload of money and another year of our lives hearing over and over again from this corrupt fake news media about Trump-Russia collusion when we've got no evidence, when you have the biggest hit people on the job, and they couldn't
We don't need a special counsel to prosecute mortgage fraud. And we might need a special counsel to investigate what the special counsel was doing in terms of abusing General Flynn. But beyond that, you're right. There's nothing to be investigated. And to the degree there are issues with people filing foreign agent registration forms late and such, that's something a low-level prosecutor in the Justice Department can handle out of his back pocket.
I got to take a break. When we come back, Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton, he's the one that discovered Andrew Weissman and, of course, his bias against Donald Trump. We continue with Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton. Of course, he has been the one that has filed all these Freedom of Information Act requests, and he discovered that Andrew Weissman is, in fact, just like this guy Peter Strzok, somebody that loves Clinton and is not a fan of Donald Trump's. One of the things that I really admire about you and your group, and the same with the ACLJ, I know Jay Sekulow's group does it, and the same with Mark Levin's group, Landmark Legal Foundation. I mean, all of you guys do phenomenal work. You guys have focused a lot on getting documents that the government is constantly trying to hide through Freedom of Information Act requests. But I know for a fact that you guys have, that they delay and they obfuscate and they obstruct, and then you get back redacted, you know, emails and redacted information that are meaningless because they really don't want us to have, you know, a full and complete knowledge of who they are and what they're actually doing.
Well, that's true. And what's most disconcerting, it's still happening, especially with the Clinton email issue. You've got this Justice Department, this State Department, still protecting and defending Hillary Clinton, stalling the release of emails, redacting everything. They don't want us to go forward in any aggressive way over the Clinton email matter. It's really disturbing to see that the administration of a president elected to drain the swamp, his appointees are continuing to protect one of the chief examples of the swamp think, which is Hillary Clinton's approach to the rule of law, which was to undermine it.
Doesn't this now mean, because the fix was in, that if we have equal justice under the law, if laws matter, doesn't it mean that they've got to start from scratch on one important issue? If Comey and Strzok And all these anti-Trump, pro-Hillary people were in charge of the investigation into the email server scandal. Doesn't this now warrant? Because I know laws were broken. We know law. We know that classified, top secret, SAS, special access program information, the highest level of confidentiality. We know that she had it on this private server in a mom and pop shop bathroom. We know she destroyed such materials, also a crime. We know that she used acid wash and bleach bit and deleted the emails. We know they busted up these devices with hammers, which to me is clear obstruction of justice. You know, I was asking Alan Dershowitz about this last night. You have to have intent. Well, if you use bleach bit and you bust up devices and you delete the emails, that tells me there's motive because those emails were subpoenaed.
Look, we started off the segment talking about the FBI agent who was a Hillary fan and an anti-Trump hater. He was running the Clinton investigation. If that doesn't tell you it's been compromised, what other evidence do we need? It needs to be reopened. We need I don't know if we need a special counsel per se, but if we're going to have a special counsel, let's be sure it's under the control of elected or appointed officials subject to confirmation by the Senate. And the attorney general or his designee should appoint a special counsel, bring in a U.S. attorney, and start over again with the Clinton email scandal investigation.
Obviously, they didn't do an investigation. You know, and that then raises questions about Comey. I mean, is that by definition, and I know you've got a team of lawyers over at Judicial Watch, if James Comey and others had no intention of doing their job from the get-go and the fix was in, isn't that in and of itself an obstruction of justice case?
Well, you know, maybe. What I think is interesting is that Comey illegally leaked information to the New York Times, it looks like, in order to get this special counsel appointed.
He
left with documents, some of which may have been classified.
Reeks of corruption. I am flabbergasted this is happening in the United States of America.
You know, I don't know, frankly, forget about the investigations being redeemable. I don't know if the FBI as an agency is redeemable after what its leadership over the last several years has done to it. I know there are a lot of agents there who are great, but the leadership is off the rails, out of control, and oblivious to the damage done to the institution. And I don't know if the institution can be reformed and restored. I really don't.
Yeah. All right. Well, I really applaud the work you're doing. Thank you so much. Tom Fitton is the president of Judicial Watch. Thank you, Tom, for being with us. All right, we got our news roundup, information overload coming. When we come back, Congressman Biggs of Arizona, Gates of Florida, Louis Gohmert of Texas, Ainsley Earhart stops by, and we'll talk to her about all this breaking news and much more. 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to be a part of the program. We are in the sewer, the swamp that is our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., and we'll continue.
You know, I don't get credit for one thing. It always bothered me. I spent a tiny fraction of what she spent in wave one. You know, in the old days, if you spend less and you win, that's a good thing. Over here, you don't get any credit for it. We spent 25 or 30%. She was at, what number? 2.2 billion, I understand. 2.2 billion. Do you think those consultants made a couple of bucks on that election? Didn't she spend 12.4 million on a dossier that was a total phony? Right? 12.4 million? So we spent a tiny fraction, think of it, a tiny fraction of the money, and we won. But we won because of people like you.
And about 7 million tweets with political content shared just before and just after the election. About 1 in 5 tweets, 20% of them, came from accounts traced back to Russia, WikiLeaks, and junk news sources. And the researchers say, and that's what the shading is about here, they were disproportionately targeted to some swing states.
That's right. We're actually correcting a story that we have been reporting throughout the day today about an email that was sent to the Trump campaign, to then-candidate Trump, Donald Trump Jr., and others during the heat of the campaign season. This email included a decryption key and also a link to where they could access some of these these hacked WikiLeaks documents from the Democratic National Committee. Now, we've been reporting that this email came on September 4th. That was before some of these documents were publicly available. But we have just obtained a copy of this email. And instead, we now learn that this this email was on September 14th. So that is 10 days later than what we originally reported earlier today. And this is appears to change the understanding of this story, because initially it seemed perhaps they were being offered access to documents that were not yet publicly available. But in this email from an individual named Michael Erickson, they do direct the Trump campaign to some publicly available documents, hacked documents from WikiLeaks, as well as from the former Secretary of State, Colin Powell, saying that those documents are indeed available. Now, our initial reporting on that September 4th date was based on two sources who had seen this email, but that information was incorrect now based on a copy of the email that we have obtained this afternoon. So, Brooke, it just shows that perhaps the initial understanding of what this email was perhaps is not as significant as what we know now based on this email.
Oops, more fake news. Shouldn't be a shock. Hour two, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. I don't think now it's every day pretty much the fake news industry, the destroy Trump media, comes out with something wrong. The president, yeah, right, he didn't spend as much money as the Democrats or Hillary Clinton, but it was Hillary's campaign. They are the ones that paid Fusion GPS, that paid Christopher Steele for the phony, lying Russian propaganda dossier that was cited so often in the campaign. It was designed to pay for it so they could influence you, the American people, during the election and lead up of the election, and it's something we need to pay attention to. Greg Jarrett has written a column saying Robert Mueller and his politically biased team of prosecutors need to go. We have gone through in great detail who these people are, Democratic donors, and we learned a lot last week about people like Peter Strzok, a guy that is sending texts that he loves Hillary, hates Donald Trump, and Peter Strzok is up to his eyeballs in everything, the Clinton email server scandal, the dossier. He's there interviewing Cheryl Mills and Uma Abedin and Hillary Clinton and General Michael Flynn, and yet he's got a built-in bias, Andrew Weissman, you know, because of his tactics and unethical practices. Well, tens of thousands of people lost their jobs at Anderson Accounting when he was involved in that case with Enron. And then, of course, a number of Merrill Lynch executives went to jail. He had two decisions go against him that were massive. 9-0, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled against him, and the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals showed he was wrong. He has a history of not passing on exculpatory evidence, making up laws, and other unethical behavior. Anyway, joining us to go through all of this, Greg Jarrett is with us, Fox News legal analyst. Sidney Powell, federal appellate attorney, former federal prosecutor, author of the book License to Lie. Thank you all. Let's start with you, Greg. I don't even know where to begin here, but between the media going off and telling one lie after another, breathlessly, hysterically, and then having to pull back day after day, and this team that Mueller has put together, I can't believe it's happening in our country.
Mueller sabotaged the credibility of his own investigation, and he has only himself to blame for what might have been a probe that was viewed with trust and confidence by the American people. But Mueller chose to assemble a team of incredibly biased people to go after Donald Trump to try to undo the election and remove the president. Look, there are plenty of qualified, skilled lawyers across America who do not have a political axe to grind. Mueller should have chosen them. Instead, he chooses people like Weissman, who was there celebrating the night Hillary Clinton was supposed to win
at the Javits Center
and was defeated. He hires Jeannie Rae, who once represented Hillary Clinton in her email scandal. And then, of course, Peter Strzok. Is Peter Strzok the only FBI agent in America? How is it possible that this one guy was the lead investigator in both the Comey investigation of Clinton and the Mueller investigation of Trump, with incredible now declared bias? The evidence is there, and he's been kicked off the case.
How do we get
and
this?
It's entirely possible that Strzok is the person who presented the FISA warrant to the FISA court.
Have we confirmed now that the FISA warrant, that they used the information that Hillary Clinton and Hillary's DNC, she was running it according to Donna Brazile, do we now know if that dossier for a certainty was used to get a warrant against Donald Trump, the candidate, and or Donald Trump, the president-elect, and maybe even as president? Do we know if that was used in that case?
Well, nobody's seen the FISA warrant application, at least nobody that I know of. But I think they've admitted to some extent that the dossier formed some sort of basis for it. Congressman Jordan's questioning of Christopher Wray the other day was very telling, mainly in what Mr. Wray would not answer. And one thing I'd like to point out, too, is that Mr. Wray was actually Weissman's supposed supervisor in the Department of Justice overseeing the Enron task force investigation after 2003, when Mr. Weissman sent the four Merrill Lynch executives to prison on an indictment that didn't even state a federal offense, while he hid the evidence that showed they were innocent.
You know, I just treated all of them. I'm having a hard time because a lot of your book, License to Lie, is about Andrew Weissman. It's a chapter and verse about how unethical this guy is. Why would Robert Mueller, knowing this background, choose this individual?
Because he likes him and trusts him, and that's the kind of activity he wants conducted in this case. That's the only possible reason. The book has been out since 2014. I didn't write this book to help President Trump. I wrote it to sound the alarm because of what I'd seen as a practicing lawyer. I never intended to be an author.
So the bottom line,
what I saw was so egregious I had to write it.
So basically you've got Mueller's team covering for Clinton, and that means Comey, you know, writing an exoneration before he investigates the email server scandal, and then persecuting every Trump associate with varying standards of intensity.
All these guys are thick as thieves. They have been together and worked together. They've been friends and allies and partners. Weissman, Rosenstein, Mueller, Comey. It is bewildering to me that the Department of Justice would allow this to unfold, and Congress needs to take action. They need to put a stop to this, and Jeff Sessions in particular needs to stand up and say, in order to restore integrity, I'm stepping in, I'm going to unrecuse myself to reorder this, and then I'll recuse myself again. But he needs to replace Mueller and the team of partisans that Mueller has put together and replace them with people who are fair and impartial.
Rosenstein, who made the appointment because of the recusal of Jeff Sessions, he said he's happy with the way Mueller's conducting this investigation.
What does that tell you? It tells you he's happy with the indictment so far and the guilty pleas. And Rosenstein likely knows that these guys are going after the president to undo the election. So, of course, he's tickled pink that it's going that way.
Sidney, let's talk about the... Go ahead. You go.
Rosenstein, Mueller, Weissman, and Comey go back 20 to 30 years together.
Well, that says a lot. You brought up a case once, and that was the Departmental Disciplinary Committee for the first department, New York, Bronx counties. And there's a whole background about the Enron task force and the Merrill executives and all of the people from Anderson Accounting. Some 85,000 people, I believe, lost their jobs there. What was your involvement in that?
I was co-author of the grievance filed with the New York Bar against Andrew Weissman. Bill Hodes, one of the leading legal ethics experts in the country, took the laboring oar in filing the grievance, and he did it pro bono because we were both so outraged by the prosecutorial misconduct we saw in the Merrill Lynch case.
And what was the outcome of that?
Oh, you're going to love this, Sean. The Department of Justice was defending Mr. Weissman on the grievance because he was Mueller's general counsel at the FBI at the time. The New York Bar, without even telling us, held it for about 4 months, then sent it to Department of Justice Office of Professional Responsibility to decide the grievance. Mm-hmm. So the same entity essentially defending Weissman decided that he had committed no wrong.
Did you see the report this weekend, Greg Jarrett, about Fusion GPS trying to tie Donald Trump through the dossier and other means to this guy Epstein and this Orgy Island mess? Did you see that?
I did see it, yeah.
Scarborough, the Washington Times, has a piece out on it today.
Yeah, look, Fusion GPS and Simpson, who helped fund it through the Hillary Clinton campaign, and the DNC, and Christopher Steele. I mean, All of this violates federal criminal statutes. You know, you cannot give money to a foreign national during the course of a political campaign. And why is it that there isn't a Department of Justice investigation into that? I'm hoping that there is, and they're simply keeping it secret.
There's another Department of Justice connection to this whole thing, too, and that's Deputy Assistant Attorney General Bruce Orr, who was recently demoted within the Department of Justice because he had met with and has ties to Fusion GPS and that Trump dossier. And why he wasn't fired instead of demoted is beyond my comprehension.
Well, he had his office four doors down from Rosenstein. Stay right there. We'll continue. Sidney Powell, Greg Jarrett, 800-941 Sean, if you want to be a part of the. As we continue, Greg Jarrett and Sidney Powell are with us. All right, so we're both, all three of us seem to agree that there's nothing but a group of, if you talk about Bruce Orr and you talk about Lisa Page and you, Peter Strzok and Jeannie Ray and you talk about all these people and Weissman, straight on down the line, you know, I was watching all weekend and the coverage seems to be, oh, the president's defenders are out there trying to discredit the special counsel. And my argument, Sidney, is he discredited himself by putting in a team of people that are abusively biased.
He did. These are all people with very strong and deep ties to the Clinton campaign. And there is no way anyone can have any confidence in the veracity of what comes out of this investigation the way it's headed.
Here's what I think happened. It led by Peter Strzok, the FBI agent, who you know, apparently made incredibly disparaging remarks about the president and correspondingly supportive comments about Hillary Clinton. He decided that if Hillary Clinton were indicted as she should be for the email scandal and the Espionage Act, she wouldn't be president and Donald Trump would. So he and others set about conjuring out of thin air a way to exonerate her. And they went about and they accomplished it. It made no sense to any lawyer in America, but they did it. And then when she didn't
win. One second.
Win.
Hold on to the, then she didn't win. That now means that we didn't have a fair.
That's right.
Investigation. So it should start again, shouldn't it?
The statute of limitations has not run yet, and they need to move very quickly to reopen and reexamine the evidence. The evidence is there. A fair-minded lawyer would say, all right, let's give it to a grand jury. So when she didn't win on election night, these same people then decided, out of retribution and revenge, that they are going to do whatever they can to kick Donald Trump out of office. And if that means manufacturing crimes where crimes don't exist, so be it. And that appears to be what they're doing.
Sidney?
There's irrefutable public proof that Hillary Clinton committed a 1001 violation, which is what they've charged General Flynn with and what they charged Mr. Papadopoulos with. It's in her testimony to Congress where she said there was no classified material on her server. I mean, there are YouTube clips of it that people have tweeted. I mean, its evidence is right there. So there has never been a fair investigation of the Clinton situation, and there's nothing fair about the investigation that's going on now. It's very troubling. I told somebody the other day, we're not just playing whack-a-mole, we're playing whack-a-hydra these days.
Well, how do you untangle this mess, Greg?
Well, I think the only way to do it is to have Attorney General Sessions bring in a new special counsel and a new team of prosecutors free of conflicts of interest who will conduct a fair and unbiased, objective investigation. Justice requires it. And you cannot expect Rod Rosenstein, who's already deeply conflicted, to do it. He is the acting attorney general in the Trump-Russia investigation. He needs to be removed. Mueller needs to be removed. Weissman, Jeannie Ray, Aaron Zebley, Peter Strzok has already been removed. Andrew Weissman, all of them need to be
Strzok
removed.
Strzok has only been removed from the investigation. He should be removed from the FBI.
I agree.
All right, I want to thank you both for helping us go where no one else apparently in media wants to go, and that's towards the truth and fighting for equal justice under the law. Thank you, Sidney. We appreciate it. Greg, we'll see you tonight on Hannity, 9 Eastern. When we come back, we have Patrick Poole, national correspondent, PJ Media, retired lieutenant with the NYPD. Bill McGrady is with us. 800-941-SEAN is our number. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue straight up.
My new book, Through Your Eyes, is now on store shelves, and I am donating a portion of the proceeds to Folds of Honor, which is an organization that provides scholarships and assistance to the spouses and children of fallen soldiers.
Thank you, Folds of Honor. My name is Carolina Guerrero. I am from El Paso, Texas. I am currently attending the University of Texas at El Paso.
I'd like to thank Folds of Honor for awarding me with a scholarship. I'm from San Antonio, Texas, and I'm attending Baylor University as a biology major.
My father served 20 years in the United States Army as a Green Beret. He's 100% disabled. I'd like to thank Folds Honor again for allowing me to attend Texas A&M University and fulfill my dream. Thank you.
Obviously, it's a group effort, but as we head into the holidays, it's a happy time for many of us, but the realities are there are over 1 million dependents in this country, so spouses and children who've had somebody killed or disabled defending our freedoms. And that's why we're here on the couch today, and we're brought together to ensure we can bring a light of hope into an inherently, you know, very dark situation. But as Americans, say thank you for our freedoms.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for our fallen soldiers and their kids. And I thought when I wrote children's book, when I'm writing the children's books, I want to do something for not only our military, yeah, but for kids.
So that's the book. And Major Dan, take a look at this.
Oh, my gosh.
Ainsley Earhart is donating $50,000 to Folds of Honor.
That's coming out of my paycheck because so many people out there have bought the book, and a portion of the proceeds is going to your organization.
You guys know I'm not speechless very often, but unbelievable. And more importantly, that's 10 lives of children that will go to school literally this year. We had an amazing year at Folds. We awarded almost $16 million in scholarships. We have millions in unfunded requests from families. And you can't help but think about the title to your book, Through Your Eyes.
All right, 23 now till the top of the hour. 800-941-SHAWN is our toll-free number. You want to be a part of the program. And I was actually watching Fox and Friends this morning, and I saw this whole thing unfold. And as you know, we have associated ourselves here on this program with many military charities, the Freedom Alliance. They have a similar thing where they give scholarships to the children of fallen heroes or severely injured heroes. And they've done an amazing job. Colonel North and his group over the years have been fantastic. Another group that I'm really proud to be associated with is Building Homes for Heroes, those that are severely injured. I've met so many of these guys. They got a new home that they're going to be unveiling down in Florida this month of December coming up. And I'm going to try and make it down there if I can and be there for the opening of the house, because these homes are built specifically for the injuries that these brave men and women have. And I was watching this today, and I'm thinking, all right, well, Christmas is coming up. And Ainsley Earhart, she's one of the co-hosts of Fox and Friends. She's offering a part of the money she's made from her number one best-selling New York Times book, Through Your Eyes, My Child's Gift to Me. She's given now $50,000 to Folds of Honor, and I saw Major Dan Rooney. He's the CEO and founder of Folds of Honor, and I welcome you both to the program. Ainsley, welcome back, and Dan, it's an honor to see you. By the way, I think you could fill in for Brian or Steve any day. I thought you did great today.
Not Ainsley, though.
No, you couldn't fill in for Ainsley.
Nobody can fill in for Ainsley. She is one of a kind.
Well, number one, I was kind of inspired by it because you actually put together a montage of the kids that are benefiting from the scholarships. And I know you used examples in Ainsley's original home state of South Carolina.
Yeah, affirmative. So in Ainsley's book, obviously funded 10 scholarships, and we wanted to show her the impact she was having. You know, over $500,000 deployed this year into the state of South Carolina. And what we do is real. And the stories of the lives that are impacted are real. And we're really proud to obviously have Ainsley and her amazing new book supporting us.
You know, it's sad in so many ways. Now, I know we've made changes at the Department of Veterans Affairs. I mean, we know how atrocious the VA hospitals have been. And it's frankly been nothing but outright corruption. And I was watching this, and Ainsley, maybe you can pick it up from here. You guys actually challenged your audience this morning, and I thought I wanted to kind of add to it a little bit if we can here on the radio. And you asked people, I think it was, what, $17 a month? Am I getting that right?
Yes, it's $13 a month.
$13,
and why 13? There are 13 folds that bring the flag to its triangle shape.
Right.
And we challenge people if they became a wingman and pledged $13 a month to Folds of Honor that we would send them Ainsley's book, Through Your Eyes. And we've had over 300 people.
That's what it's going to take for me to get a copy of the book? I never got a copy from Ainsley Earhart's new book. But
I'll give you a copy, Sean.
But all right, so what drew you, Ainsley, to this charity? What was it? I mean, there's a lot of good charities, and I know actually you helped over a couple of Christmases when we did homes for building homes for heroes. What was it about Folds of Honor that drew you in? That you know you donated all this money.
Yeah, I was really torn because I love Freedom Alliance. Of course, I love Building Homes for Heroes. We've been involved, Sean and I have, with that charity for a very long time. Many of the anchors at Fox have been involved in that because Andy Pujol lost so many people that he loved in 9/11, and he gave up his job on Wall Street to start building homes for these severely injured veterans. And I met one guy, I did a story, and he was burned on 60 or 70% of his body. And his story truly changed my life. I spent a few days down in Florida with his family. And his parents left New York, left everything behind to go be with their son, and they built a house in their son's honor down there. So I love that organization, and that was tough. But I was writing children's books, and I wanted it to be a charity that involved the military but still involved children. And so I believe there isn't a coincidence. I believe that God puts people in my life and all of our lives at the right moment. So I was praying about it and doing my research, and I just asked God to send me the right charity. And so our executive producer on Fox and Friends, Gavin Haddon, said, "Have you heard of Folds of Honor?" And he said, "One of my really good friends, and they've since become best friends, Dan Rooney, just started this organization. It's now a platinum rated organization, which means they give the majority more than, what is it, Dan? You give 90% of your proceeds back into the organization, back to scholarships."
Yeah, historically, Ainsley, we're right about 90 cents of every dollar going back to fund scholarship programs.
That's amazing.
That's a really high rate.
And
it's very expensive to do this. And by the way, congrats on this is your second book, Child's, in a series now, Through Your Eyes, My Child's Gift to Me. And you do give to Folds of Honor with every book that you're selling. But I watched this, and it made me today watching the whole thing, because I do give to these other charities. Why don't you tell us, Dan, how did you come up with this concept? Because there are 13 folds, which I, by the way, I couldn't do it. But I love when you see troops with reverence fold our flag. That's why I was so angry at the NFL this year. But not to make it political, I'll drag you into my mess. But I'm like, don't take it. Too many men have fought, bled, and died fighting under that flag.
Yeah, Sean, and I'm still in the fight. And so I'm a fighter pilot in the 301st Fighter Squadron, and I'll leave New York City tomorrow morning, and I'll be in a fighter jet going supersonic on Saturday.
Wow.
And so from my perspective, and I'm the father of five daughters.
Wow.
And I think
you know where you're going?
I know where I'm going this weekend.
You're not going to tell me where you're going.
No, I could tell you, but I have to kill you. Too many people love you to do that.
What do you actually, how fast do you fly?
We get up over the speed of sound. So
unbelievable. What's that like with that sonic boom, as we call it?
Look at my hair. I have a face for radio.
Wait a minute.
My buddy John told me.
Your hair is tan. You got a tan on the top of your head. So listen, I've always thought having a shaved head makes you look tough. And a lot of my martial artist friends, they do that on purpose.
It's worth at least a couple extra knots in a fighter jet.
Oh, absolutely.
Having a shaved head. But on a serious note,
I think what you should do is take Ainsley up there with you and let her go through the sonic boom.
I would love to take Ainsley, and there is no sonic boom.
By the way, and we can film it, and we'll put it on Hannity, on my program.
Well, let's do it. It started here. Ainsley, Dan, are you up for that?
Dan, I will do it. I will do it. I'm a mom now, so it makes me a little nervous, but I will do it. But Sean does this to me. When I worked for his show, Dan, he made me jump out of an airplane twice. Not really made me, but I did it for his show, jumped out of the airplane twice, and flew in an F-15.
Well, by the way, I think even a worse assignment was sending you down a spring break for three summers in a row, one, I think, when you were expecting your baby.
I know. Danny loves that story. Yeah, so I had to go down to spring break to set some of those kids straight because they were doing some bad things.
Yeah, and she's trying off camera. You see the outtake. She's saying, "Now listen, you can't be doing this. You gotta behave. This is all gonna come back later in your future."
Sean, Dan has five girls. He would appreciate it if I did that to his girls.
I've got a daughter. I'm not. My daughter asked me to go to spring break. The answer is hell no. It's not gonna happen. Now I listen. I can't sign up for the $13 a month, and I'm gonna tell you why. Because I don't like to write a lot of checks. So I'm just going to write you one check that'll cover me for a few years, okay?
And we'd be honored to pay it forward.
But I know that our audience loves what you guys do. It's very important. We don't take as good care of our military as we should. And I was watching this morning, and frankly, Ainsley's $50,000 donation inspired me. What can we do? What can people do? How can they sign up for this $13 a month?
And they can visit foldsofhonor.org and become a wingman for $13 a month. And you don't have to write a check. We'll just hit your credit card every month. And those that sign up.
That's a great way to do it.
Now those that sign up, we're going to send them a copy of Ainsley's book as well.
Is it autographed?
Absolutely.
Okay. Ainsley, you're going to autograph as many as they.
Of course.
What? Now, I want to ask, you know, I did look through your new book. I had to steal a copy that was in the green room because I never got a free copy like everybody else did. But Through Your Eyes, My Child's Gift to Me, one of the things that kind of amazed me about the book and was pretty interesting and inspiring to me is, you know, as an adult, if it starts raining, I get pissed off. You know, if it if I have to dig out my car from the snow, it kind of pisses me off. Ah, that snow. Oh, it's raining. And it's like when you think of, or if you look at children, and they're like, it's snowing. How? Look, it snowed. It snowed. I remember when I was a kid, it snowed, no school today. I was the happiest kid in the world. Then I'd go out and make snowballs, hang on the back of cars and get arrested and get in trouble. But it was the happiest time of my life. And I think as adults, we really lose that, don't we?
I think so. I think that's why on the book tour, I've met so many grandparents that have been able to say, they love being grandparents. They love their grandkids. And I'll say, really, you can love the kids, your grandkids, more than you love your own children? I can't imagine that now that I'm a parent. And they say, I'm telling you, it is so much better. And I'll say, why? And they said, because we've learned to take small steps. We've learned to slow down a little bit. The world was such a blur when we were raising our kids. We were so busy. And now we can relax and we can have fun with our grandkids. We can spoil them and then send them home. So that's why I really.
By the way, the send them home part's the interesting part. Yes. So when they're tired and you have to put them to bed and they don't want to go to bed. My kids never wanted to go to sleep.
I know. You know, Sean, I can't get enough of my daughter, though, but I was also 39 when I was pregnant with her. I wanted to have a child. We had some difficulties getting pregnant, and when I finally held her in my arms, I remember hearing a testimony from a man who said his child was born with a terminal illness, and every time the child would cry at night, he and his wife would take turns just holding the child, and he said every other parent was so frustrated when their kids would get to them in the middle of the night, but I loved it because I knew my child wasn't going to live a very long life. And so I thought about that when I had Hayden, and she has taught me so much about, you know, we are all so busy. I think that we have our jobs, we have our kids.
Oh, it's go, 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 go. You never rest.
Go, go. Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah. And so I think having her has taught me you can put down the pen and paper at work. You can pack up a little early. And I've worked so hard. I'm not encouraging people not to work hard because I've done that. And I've worked the crazy hours and stayed the overnight for, you know, years on end at Fox News. But she's just taught me what's really important, and that is just to enjoy the quality time that I have with her and to slow down and take a breath. That's what the book is about.
That's a great Christmas message, and the book is called Through Your Eyes, My Child's Gift to Me. It's in bookstores everywhere. And if you go to Dan's website for Folds of Honor, you'll get a free copy of Ainsley's book, and you can sign up $13 a month, and you can help put these kids through college. And where do they go to do that, Dan?
Yeah, spouses and children through college at foldsofhonor.org. And freedom isn't free, and we'd be honored to pay it forward and send you a copy of Ainsley's amazing book, Through Your Eyes.
Well, that was extremely generous. I will be sending you a check. I'm really glad you do this. God bless you. And Ainsley, thanks for being with us. I thought it was a great segment this morning.
Can I add one more thing?
Yeah.
I'm going to be in Dallas on Sunday signing books at 1 o'clock. On Sunday, December 3rd. So if you live in Dallas, please come out and meet me so I'm not at the table by myself. It's at West.
I doubt that's going to happen.
What?
I doubt that's going to be the case, but okay.
Okay.
All right, we'll put it on our website. And thank you both for being with us. Great job, both of you. And we appreciate your time. And Merry Christmas to everybody. We have a lot to be thankful for. And giving back, I think, is a key responsibility of everyone that's been so blessed by our military. Quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue Sean Hannity Show. All right, we have an amazing Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. I mean, we have so much breaking. We may have a huge development on Uranium One. I'm not sure if it breaks tonight. And it'll be about the FBI under Mueller's failure. I'll explain. Let not your heart be troubled. But this is going to be big. Also, Michelle Malkin and Dan Bongino and Dana Loesch and Larry Elder and Tommy Lahren all tonight, 9 Eastern. But listen, all right, Hannity tonight at 9. Awesome show, I promise you. 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. As always, thank you for being with us. We'll see you back here tomorrow.